Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences, itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin DNR. Preventing food waste and composting scraps and uneaten veggies, grains, and fruit can help the environment. More dnr.wi.gov by searching food waste.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joy Cardine with you. It's about 6 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, October the 18th. We will be talking with John Peavyhouse coming up in this hour. He is, as you know, a political scientist, formerly from UW-Madison, who talks with us frequently on issues in the Middle East, especially Iraq and Iran. He is also the author of a new book, While Dangers Gather, Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers, and we will talk with him about how Congress is or is not doing its job when it comes to President Bush and the war in Iraq. And maybe, what about a possible strike on Iran? So we'll talk with John Peavyhouse about that coming up in just a few minutes. But first, Cheryl Gasser, my partner in pledge drive pitching, joins me for a few more minutes to begin the hour. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning, Joy. Well, last hour, a little bit of news to report. Unfortunately, we didn't reach the $6,000 goal. We did, however.
You know what, Cheryl? I'm going to say that we don't know yet if we reached the $6,000. Because sometimes it takes a little bit to tally them all up. But you're right. It looks like we might have fallen a little bit short.
But it's a new hour and a new goal. This hour, we want to raise $9,000 in support of Wisconsin Public Radio, in support of Joy Cardine and all that she does for you each weekday morning here on the Ideas Network. The number to call to make a pledge at any level is 800-383-9772. You can also pledge online at WPR.org. But yours this hour, and this hour only, for a pledge of $150. We'll be happy to send you John Peavyhouse's new book, While Dangers Gather.
Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers, 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org. Pledge your support to Wisconsin Public Radio because you know Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported and that a good chunk of our budget comes from contributions from listeners like you. You are the most important source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio, funding to bring you this radio program and all of what you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio, all of the costs associated with putting a radio show together. You help pay for that with your contribution. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org. Our goal this hour, a really, really big one, $9,000. But that's because we know you support Wisconsin Public Radio. This is an hour that traditionally has had lots of listeners and lots of support. That's based on our past record, $9,000. It's going to be it's a big goal to make, but with your help, we can do it.
1-800-383-9772. From state affairs to international affairs, Joy covers it all. She brings you top-notch guests on issues of the day. She keeps you up to date and informed, gives you the chance to take part in the discussion when you're so moved, and that is worth something. Wisconsin Public Radio, a unique service. Joy Cardine, an amazing host. You get wonderful guests, and you, of course, wonderful listeners. If you're already a member, thank you so much. But if not, we want to hear from you now during this 8 o'clock hour. Help us reach our goal of $9,000, 1-800-383-9772.
1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org. Pledge any amount to support Wisconsin Public Radio. It's completely up to you how much you donate. It's also completely up to you how you want to pay for that pledge, if you want to put it on a credit card, or if you want to have us send you a bill in the mail, or if you want to do monthly installments, whatever the case may be, we will make it as easy as possible for you to fulfill your pledge and pay for your pledge. All you need to do is go to our website, WPR.org, and click on the spot where it says click here to pledge, or call 1-800-383-9772 and talk to a volunteer who will get you set.
Either way, it takes just 2 to 3 minutes, and you'll be on your way, having done your part to keep Wisconsin Public Radio going strong, supporting the service that you have come to count on for news and information. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org. And again, for a pledge of $150 a year or more, we will send you John Peavyhouse's brand new book, While Dangers Gather, Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers. But also, you will be receiving the member benefit card, good for two-for-one entrees at 250 restaurants around the state, two nights for the price of one at 44 bed and breakfasts in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Minnesota, and other online shopping discounts. Yours for a pledge of $150 a year or more.
And we want to thank everyone who has called in a pledge so far this whole drive. Maybe you just called in your pledge last hour. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thanks to Diane and Cable, who did just call in a pledge recently. She says, I'm from Dave Obie's district, and I support Wisconsin Public Radio. I listen every day. It's over and above what you can get anywhere else. Diane, thank you so much for calling in a pledge. We talked with Congressman Obie in our last hour. We talked with Washington Post writer and CNN host Howard Kurtz in our first hour this morning. We talked to top-notch guests like we will this hour, John Peavyhouse, every single day. What's that worth to you to hear from these renowned guests from all over the world, all over the country, talking with you about their area of expertise? 1-800-383-9772. I know it's hard to put a dollar amount on it, but try. Is it worth $10 a month? Is it worth $20 a month? 1-800-383-9772.
Maybe Wisconsin Public Radio is worth a dollar a day to you. That works out to a little over $30 a month. Whatever the level, we want to hear from you during this hour. 800-383-9772 or WPR.org. Our goal this hour, $9,000. That's a hefty goal, but we've done it in the past. You've done it in the past. You've contributed at that level overall, and we do that pledge by pledge, call by call, and web pledge by web pledge. Please be as generous as you can, but any amount makes you a member.
Thanks to Vicki in Milwaukee, who also called in a pledge, and she says she pledged because I have Wisconsin Public Radio on all day long. Well, you're my kind of woman, Vicki, and I'm like that too. When I'm not here and I'm at home or in the car, I have Wisconsin Public Radio on. It really is a great companion when you're traveling around the state or driving around on errands or whatever the case may be. Really, Cheryl, not to pat ourselves on the back too hard
here,
but there isn't really anything like this service, the Ideas Network, anywhere else. I have been in many, many, many different states and at many, many different public radio conferences, and I'm aware of what the public radio system is around the country, and there's nothing else quite like this, where you have issue-oriented, in-depth call-in talk shows all day long, practically, on a network where you will hear state issues covered in depth where you won't get anywhere else, but also national issues and international issues with guests who might be in your own backyard or guests from someplace all over the world. So this is a unique service, and it's a service that costs money. Quality costs money, and we come to you a few times a year to ask you to help chip in and pay that cost. Help us bring you this program and all of what you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio with your contribution of any amount. 1-800-383-9772. The number to call to make the pledge, to become a supporter of Wisconsin Public Radio, and if you want to pick up John Peavyhouse's book, While Dangers Gather, Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers.
That book, our thank you gift to you, yours for a pledge of $150 a year or more to Wisconsin Public Radio. Your support is so important. Listener support, the most important part of our budget. 31% of our funding comes from listeners like you. Thank you if you're already a member. If not, why don't you go to the phone now, make that call, make the decision, and make the call, 800-383-9772 or WPR.org. Joy, we're doing pretty well toward that goal, $9,000 our goal. How much raised so far?
$710 is what just appeared on our computer screen, so good to know that that we have four people who have called in pledges so far this hour. One person who's a brand new member to Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to all of you for getting us off to a good start this hour, and I hope you keep us in mind as we go through the program. Cheryl, thanks very much. We'll talk to you later. And let me welcome in our guest right now, if I can find my information on him. I will, I'm sure. John Peavyhouse joins us. He is the co-author of the book, While Dangers Gather, Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers. He is an associate professor of political science at the Harris School for Public Policy at the University of Chicago. Formerly with the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and as I mentioned, a frequent guest on this program and other programs on Wisconsin Public Radio. He is the author previously of Democracy from Above, and again, his most recent book, While Dangers Gather, Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for hanging in there while we did some pledge drive business.
It's a very worthy cause.
Well, thank you very much. While Dangers Gather, that, you know, it's a very intriguing title. What is the premise of the book?
So the premise of, I should say something for a second about the title, and we'll kind of get into that. The title is was a remark made by President Bush as the country was making the case to go to war in Iraq in 2003. It was a very defining moment, we thought, in the public dialogue over Iraq, where you saw sort of a slight turn in favor in the public opinion of going to war, where he said, you know, the United States cannot stand idly by while dangers gather, and, you know, Saddam Hussein gathers weapons of mass destruction, which, of course, we now know, which obviously was the heart of his case. And so one thing that we wanted to look at in the book as that, in effect, that the book began, the genesis of the book began around that time, where all the discussion about should we go to war in Iraq, you know, centered clearly and rightfully around the questions of weapons of mass destruction and was the war justified. But what we thought was sort of absent from a lot of that discussion, at least in the major media, was, you know, where's Congress? I mean, after all, the Constitution gives Congress the right to declare war, and there was eventually an authorization put through Congress, but even that, for a time, was questioned, and there were people on both sides of the political aisle, or both sides of the political spectrum, saying, well, you know, he doesn't really need to go to Congress, and should he go to Congress? And my co-author and I started reflecting, you know, well, why is that? Why are we having these debates? Because there's clearly a constitutional role for Congress, and this isn't new. You know, if you look historically, one point we make in the book is that historically, this question of how much should Congress be involved in deciding whether to go to war, or then how much should they be involved in the operations during the war, these are all open questions that have been hotly debated for, and at least as we trace in our book, back to the end of World War II.
Yeah. Did, with the war in Iraq, Congress, while giving the authorization of the use of force, was it still, though, maybe standing idly by in terms of, now everybody says it was a mistake in voting yes for that?
We make the argument that it was, but that was totally expected, that is not surprising that it was. The basic argument of the book is that what you can expect is that if there same political party that controls the White House, essentially, controls Congress, that historically, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, you're very unlikely to get much pushback from Congress. And we make several arguments about why that's the case, including the fact that, you know, Republicans tend to have similar worldviews about, you know, what's a threat, who is a threat, what is a noble goal for American foreign policy. They also tend to believe each other a little bit more readily. So Republican congresspersons will believe a Republican president who says there is a threat here, you know, whether it's ranging from the intelligence or the logic behind going to war. Same for Democrats. And what we trace through the book, both through some statistical analysis, but also quite a few more historical studies ranging from Indochina in 1954 to all the way up to Kosovo in 1998 and 1999, is that Congress really demurs and is very quiet when it's the same parties in control. You can't find an occasional historical exception, but the broad pattern is Republican president, Republican Congress, the president has a very free hand to go to war, and same with Democrats. Democrat president, Democratic Congress, president tends to have a much freer hand. Yeah. So the fact that, you know, they were fairly quiet in the lead-up to Iraq, and the fact that they were quiet, and again, our argument should not be surprising, you know, through when viewed through a historical lens.
Yeah. Does President, the President, in this case President Bush, have to go to Congress to ask permission to launch a military strike against Iran's nuclear facilities?
Well, there's a legal question, there's a political question mm-hmm. there. The legal question is, he does, the Powers Act passed, you know, after Vietnam, under the Nixon administration, says that the president has the power to deploy troops without asking Congress, you know, in a period of what he would consider a national emergency, but then he has 60 days to secure 60, and then there's a 30-day grace window, so technically 90 days to secure congressional approval of the troops being in the field. Otherwise, a concurrent resolution passed in Congress by both houses could bring them back home under the War Powers Act. Now, as many people will tell you, especially those who are skeptics of Congress and their ability in foreign policy, the War Powers Act has never actually been activated. It's never, not just have they never been brought home, but there actually have been very few times where the War Powers Act is even discussed in Congress. And we have to take this on in the book, because that's sort of the knee-jerk reaction of most scholars, legal scholars especially, is that no, Congress, if Bush wants to go to Iran, Congress won't play a role because they won't uphold the War Powers Act as they should. But then you get into the political side of the question, which is, you know, is the president going to be better off having congressional approval or not? And we make the argument that most presidents really do want and try to seek congressional approval. It's easy, and it's almost a foregone conclusion they will if their party is in control, because, again, they know it's an easy road mm-hmm. To get that. So in this particular instance, I think that, you know, the legal answer is he does eventually have to convince Congress under the War Powers Act legally, but politically it becomes very tough for him just to try to skirt and go around Congress because it's now controlled by a different political party, and Congress could make life exceedingly difficult for him. And the way they do that, and we can, you know, continue to talk about this later, but I'll just sort of throw this out, we found that the main way Congress influences presidential decision-making about questions of war, whether it's Iran or Iraq, is through public opinion, through shifts in public opinion, that Congress has a very unique ability to keep a proposed use of military force like Iran in the news and in the media. And sort of out there, Congress is relaying information to the public, which then, as the public becomes more and less supportive of both the president and the proposed, you know, military strike, that begins to change the president's calculus of, you know, do I really want to do something that's going to be exceedingly unpopular? Because remember, going into Iraq, I mean, Iraq is obviously fairly unpopular now. Going in, and especially, you know, you get that rally effect the minute the war starts, it was fairly popular. It wasn't overwhelmingly popular, but it was fairly popular at the beginning. Just like if you look historically, all wars have been, ranging from Korea to Vietnam, to both Iraq wars.
Yeah. I brought that up in part because recently Congress did vote to call Iran's Revolutionary Army a terrorist organization, and many were saying that this is the first step in a possible military strike against Iran.
It could be. I think it was, well, let's put it this way. I think it was a signal to Iran that Congress recognizes them as a danger and as a potential threat that's out there. I do think, though, it's a much bigger step to then authorize the use of military force. If you sort of watch some and read some of the dialogue that's been going on about Iran in Congress and in, you know, for example, the Senate, you know, Foreign Affairs Committee discussions, people, most in Congress, Republican or Democrat, agree that Iran could be a big threat, Iran could be a big problem. But then when they're asked, you know, well, what about the use of military force? Everyone, and now it's sort of many Republicans and Democrats are saying, well, not so fast, that, you know, we really need to make sure we're doing the right thing. People often make an analogy to Iraq. You know, as you mentioned, a lot of people think we sort of rushed into Iraq now and that Congress didn't play a big enough role in that. And so Congress now, especially the Democrats in Congress, want to make sure that if this happens, there's going to be a lot of discussion. There's going to be a lot of checking the intelligence. There's going to be a lot of checking the planning. Whereas, again, in the first Gulf War, that was just sort of all signed off on and assumed, you know, that would all be okay.
We're talking with John Peavyhouse, who is co-author of the book While Dangers Gather, Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers. We'll accept your questions about how Congress is doing in terms of checking this president's war powers. In your opinion, 1-800-642-1234 is our toll-free number to join in the discussion. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. This reminder, we are asking for your pledges of support this hour as our fall membership drive continues. The number to call to make a contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, 1-800-383-9772, 1-800-383-9772. You can also pledge on our web, WPR.org, about $710 raised so far toward a $9,000 goal. Well on our way, but as you can tell, not there yet. A pledge of any amount is appreciated. A reminder that if you would pledge $150 to Wisconsin Public Radio, the thank you gift that we are offering this hour, besides the member benefit card, is our guest's book, While Dangers Gather, Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers. Our guest is a fairly regular guest on Wisconsin Public Radio, and since he's a newly published author, we thought we would offer his book as our thank you gift to you for a pledge of support this hour. John Peavyhouse often talks with us about the politics of Iran and Iraq. He is an associate professor of political science at the Harris School for Public Policy at the University of Chicago. Again, co-author of While Dangers Gather, Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers. We also have open lines if you'd like to talk with John Peavyhouse about presidential war powers and how Congress can check those presidential war powers. Or let's also talk about some of the latest issues in the news when it comes to Iran and Iraq and the Middle East area. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Professor Peavyhouse, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what President Bush had to say yesterday at his news conference. It startled a lot of people when President Bush said that if those of us who, if you're concerned about World War III, you should be concerned about keeping nuclear technology out of the hands of Iran. Talk about what was your reaction to that, with the president bringing up, invoking World War III?
Well, I think there's a lot to unpack in that statement, and there's a, as you say, there's a lot of different ways you can read it. My own read. So let me give you some of the possibilities here. One is that the way many people I think have interpreted it, and the reason they're so surprised by it, is that this is sort of an open threat. That, if the international community, and in particular, Iran's neighbors and allies don't put pressure on it to stop nuclearization and proliferation, then, there's going to be a war, and that there'll be some coalition of countries put together by the U.S., a la World War II, to try to overthrow Iran. And I think that, that's one clear way to read the statement. I think it's more posturing than that. I think I think that statement was trying to do a couple things. One, I think it was a wake-up call to the international community to keep Iran on the radar screen. That, the Security Council about a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago, decided they would wait to take formal action on whether they were going to punish Iran for violating IAEA standards. And it sort of died off, and people aren't paying attention to it. And I think the Bush administration this is sort of front and center in their mind, as much as Iraq is Iran and the potential threat that Iran poses, especially if they get nuclear weapons. Another way to read this is just, him making an observation. Well, if Iran gets nukes, then they will attack Israel, as they've said they would, or that they said is their desire to, Ahmadinejad's quote, wiping Israel off the map. Mm-hmm. I read it as a big signal to Russia. You know, over the last month, we've seen American and Russian relations cool. Putin was just in Iran and now has invited Ahmadinejad back to Moscow for more meetings. And, I think there are some people now thinking, well, could Iran and Russia be forming a strategic partnership sort of to balance the United States and to sort of counter the United States? And I think one of the reasons Bush is keeping Iran front and center and sort of making these statements about Iran and the future possibilities of wars is just to warn Russia as well that we view Iran as a real potential problem and they shouldn't get too close, and that, you know, choosing to side with Iran could mean, you know, choosing a side that is choosing a side that we may choose to take action against down the road. And so I don't read it quite as bellicose as I think some are, but I do think that it definitely is a signal, and it's, you know, it's rhetoric to keep Iran on the table and to keep the screws to Iran and to Russia as well.
To the phones, Pat in Decorah, Iowa. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to make a comment. I think everybody's getting too carried away with war thing. First of all, a lot of our allies still question what we've done in Iran. They don't totally trust us. If we go ahead and bomb Iran, we will alienate them, as well as probably every Arab country. Now, our policy that we've carried out in Iraq has created 90% of the problems there. And if we go ahead with Iran as well, we basically, I think, will be pretty much on our own. And we can put it on Bush's door. He's a murderer. He has killed hundreds of thousands of Iraqis. You know, people need to wake up and realize what he has done, not allow him to continue murdering people at will.
That aside, you have a reaction to her sentiment, John Peavyhouse?
Well, I've said before on the show, I am skeptical that we're going to war in Iran anytime soon. For some of the reasons Pat articulates, we don't have a lot of support internationally for more operations. I think the Security Council will move. Whether they'll do anything, whether they will do something as harsh as the United States would like, I doubt. You know, I don't think we'll see massive sanctions put on Iran if they refuse to comply with inspections. But I do think there will be some punitive action taken against them by the Security Council. The bottom line is, unlike Iraq, Iran has friends, and Iran has allies, and that, you know, will not support, and they may not go to war if we would, in the unlikely event that we go to war against Iran, they won't stand idly by. Now, whether that means they then join the war with them or not, I don't think so, but I think, you know, you talk about supply chains or just general international support. Iran has friends, and they may not be friends that we like, or they may not be friends that we would particularly care about making angry, but they have friends, and they have friends who can supply them with weapons and can support them in a military action. The second thing to talk about with Iran is not just the international scene, but the domestic side. Like I said earlier, there are a lot of people in this country, clearly Pat was one of them, who are skeptical of war in Iran, even people who believe that Iran is a threat. And, you know, no, I don't think there are many people out there who think, I mean, Najad is someone who, you know, we should go out and be trying to make friends with. They clearly potentially are a threat to American national interest. And I think if the Iraq war doesn't happen, you know, Saddam Hussein is still in power, and if you don't have, you know, the issues going on in the Middle East that are going on now, I think Iran looks very different. I mean, that would be my counterfactual, that, you know, absent Iraq, we are probably even more aggressive against Iran. Not, again, maybe not necessarily a military strike, but there's too many, you know, there's too many irons in the fire right now, I think, to be thinking about a military strike against Iran. But you've also now got a Democratic Congress, and there is no way that there's going to be strikes against Iran or even more bellicose rhetoric from Bush about Iran without the Democrats standing up and saying, wait a minute, we're not doing this again. Now, can they completely stop him from doing anything? No. If the president wants to go to war, he's the commander-in-chief. You know, he can order the troops in the field. But the response from Congress in that instance would be exceedingly strong. And mostly from the Democrats, but you even see a number of moderate Republicans that have expressed skepticism about strikes on Iran.
That reminds me of another thing that the president said in his news conference yesterday, that is that he believes that Congress has turned around somewhat when it comes to the war in Iraq, that now Congress has accepted General Petraeus's strategy and testimony and is willing to let this play out the way it plays out and not insist on troop withdrawals and stopping the war and that sort of thing. Is that how you read the current situation in Congress?
Not necessarily. I wouldn't agree with that assessment. I think, and this is an argument that we make in our book, you see just the general tenor of the rhetoric tend to switch when one party loses control of Congress. So what we saw in 2006, you had unified government, same party in the president and the executive, then you had a switch where it was divided government, and you saw a general change in the tenor of the discussion about Iraq, right? I mean, the House passes a resolution calling for withdrawal, the Senate doesn't pass it. But remember, the margin of Democratic control in the Senate is so narrow that you need a lot of aisle crossers to get things done. The same can be said in the House, even on non-military issues with SCHIP. You know, mm-hmm. There needs to be a number of Republicans defect to override a veto or to get particular things done. And we show historically that as that majority size grows, Congress becomes more emboldened. So my prediction would be, you know, and again, it's hard to say because we'll have a new president in the next election. Say you had another congressional election with the Bush administration saying if the Democrats had, you know, a few more votes in the Senate, a few more votes in the House, you would have seen some of these measures pass. I don't think Congress would have backed down, but the Democrats knew they didn't have the vote. But the fact that they kept knowing that, I mean, the Democrats knew they didn't have the votes, but the fact that they pressed, the fact that they kept this, you know, in the public's eye, and the fact that they were continually holding hearings and keeping this, you know, in the face of the public, I think that was the goal. I think the goal was to continually shed light on what's going on in Iraq, keep it in the news because public opinion, public support for the war still is very low. It's true. At the end of the day, they gave the administration a pass, and they said, look, for now, we'll let you go. But I don't think that's because a whole lot of people became convinced by Petraeus' testimony or anything else. I think it was that they literally didn't have the votes.
Mm-hmm. Rob and Howard, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I hope this isn't too far off the subject material, but I have a theory that I haven't heard discussed much that I'd like you and your guests maybe to comment on. I believe that, in a way, Congress may be able to argue the presidential war powers in that I believe that the reason why we haven't had a terrorist attack on our soil in so long, which President Bush uses as his defense with and support of his war policy in Iraq, is that there could be the premise that al-Qaeda wants us there because it's weakening our economy and weakening our stance internationally with our military response in other situations. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Do you follow that, Professor Peavyhouse?
No, absolutely. There's two things I want to talk about there. One is sort of why has there been no terrorist attack in the U.S., and that's really difficult to say. I mean, on one hand, you have, you know, I would argue sort of supporters or co-partisans of the president saying, well, it's about his policies, maybe ranging from Iraq to Homeland Security. On the other side, I think you have people saying, well, you know, no, you've actually, the probability is probably higher because of Iraq. I think it was a previous caller's probably, you know, or kind of her idea. And then people like myself who just think, you know, look, terrorist attacks are rare anyway. Mm-hmm. And you go a decade without one, and then you'll have one, and then you have another decade without one. And so it's not to say policy doesn't matter. The policy we have to guard against terrorism does matter. But, you know, it's just so hard to say there has or has not been a terrorist attack because of X, because of policy X. It's just really difficult. This issue of al-Qaeda, you know, Rob's theory is not, he's right, people don't talk about it a lot, but it's sort of out there, sort of under the radar a bit. You know, al-Qaeda got a lot of their foot soldiers. They were able to recruit heavily because of Afghanistan, right? And the argument they made about Afghanistan, the Afghanistan war, which, you know, this is, for anyone who's followed the Middle East in the last two or three years or discussions of al-Qaeda, you've heard this, right, that al-Qaeda mm-hmm. obviously was born sort of in the fires of the Afghanistan war, and a lot of these people got their experience and their training in Afghanistan fighting the Soviets. The Al-Qaeda line, you know, if you would, you know, ask someone who was, you know, an Al-Qaeda operative, you know, say, what have you done? What, why are you there? One of the big appeals of Al-Qaeda is that they claimed to bring down the Soviet Union, right? So someone who is a strong Al-Qaeda adherent will tell you the Soviet Union fell not because of, you know, the Reagan defense spending or because of, you know, any policies by the United States. The Soviet Union fell because they bled to death in Afghanistan, and that is their view of the world. I don't agree with that view. Almost no one would, but that is their sort of mythology that's been built up in the Al-Qaeda organization. So it's very consistent, then, that they would say, well, if the United States is sort of expending all of these resources in the Middle East, and we can continue to weaken the economy, you know, weaken the military little by little, you know, that I think that is part of the rhetoric, and I think that's part of the recruiting rhetoric that Al-Qaeda certainly uses is, look, we brought down the Soviet Union, we can bring down the other superpower as well. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that I don't at all agree with that logic, but that is the recruiting logic I think that Al-Qaeda uses. And so there are people starting to make this argument that, look, the longer we stay, the more we're sort of playing into their strategy. The flip side is, you know, you can make the argument, well, but if we show that we're not going to, and this has been Bush's line, you know, if we're not going to show that we can carry through on a commitment, that shows we're weak as well, and that we're not going to stand up to them over the long haul, and that they've essentially won. And that, you know, that's an argument that doesn't have a clear answer, you know, to.
Let me go next to David in Fenimore. Hi, David.
Hi. Good morning. I'd just like to agree with the lady that most of the trouble we're having with Iran now, its emergence as a very strong force in the region is a result of the disaster of Iraq, just so we don't forget that. And to ask, I may have missed it, but I didn't hear any mention of the what I understood is a very clear warning from Putin for any country to not consider, even think about a military threat against Iran. Mm-hmm. You certainly don't simply disregard that. I'd just like your comment about it.
Sure. Well, that was, you know, I think Putin's statement, and I should have actually mentioned that, Putin's statement, I didn't read it as quite as strong as that, but I do think that this whole sort of thaw between Russia and Iran was part of the impetus for Bush's statement yesterday about, you know, World War III, was, you know, he's trying to warn Putin not to get too close to Iran, because let's face it, when we still think about the big, you know, the next big war, we think great powers, right? We think the U.S. versus Russia or the U.S. versus China or, you know, something like that. So I think that was the impetus for Bush's comment. You know, the Iran question, I think there's two issues here. One is, would Iran have attempted to proliferate without Iraq? Would they still be attempting to build nuclear weapons? My argument to that is that they would. That Ahmadinejad, when he came into office before Iraq even began, was very much in favor of doing this, and that he was part of a conservative movement that felt that Iran was always going to be at the whim of the United States or Israel and other powers in the Middle East. And so I think you would still see them working on proliferation with or without Iraq. Would they be as aggressive at it? Would they be as aggressive at supporting, for example, Hezbollah in Lebanon without Iraq? I don't think so. I mean, both of these callers are right. I mean, Iran, there's a power vacuum now, right? And this was why in the first Gulf War we didn't go to Baghdad. This is one of the big strategic reasons why we kept Saddam in power in the first time, was we create a strategic vacuum that no one would be able to fill except Iran, and this would only increase Iran's power. Well, that's what's going to happen this time, especially if you don't leave an exceedingly strong, you know, politically and militarily strong regime in Iraq when the American military leaves. That's leaving influence to be garnered by Iran throughout the whole region. So I think there's a little bit of both. There's a little bit of, I think this would have happened anyway, given the leadership in Iran, but I do think the opportunities have increased for them to gain power because of Iraq.
An email from Raleigh in New Berlin. I read somewhere that if Congress would actually declare war, this would trigger international mutual defense treaties worldwide and open up a gigantic can of worms. Do you know what he's talking about?
Well, it depends. The main treaty that So the main issue that the rise of this, frankly, is NATO. It's a little bit cynical on my part, but the only meaningful military treaty I think that we have that, you know, we think about a lot is NATO. I mean, we have other defense pacts with other states, clearly, but I mean, the main one is NATO. And it's not necessarily the case. I mean, NATO has to vote on one of the articles of self-defense, right? Because what the NATO treaty says is, you know, an attack on one state is an attack on all. The only time that has ever been voted on and approved, the only time it's ever been voted on, period, was after Afghanistan. Or, sorry, after 9-11 and for Afghanistan was the NATO country said the terrorist attacks of 9-11 were an attack equivalent to an attack on all states. And that's why the NATO states have played such a huge role increasingly in Afghanistan, is that that was considered sort of a mutual security issue. But that it gets triggered by a decision that happens among the leaders of the NATO countries, not necessarily by passage of a declaration of war by Congress. So,
well, so our hour is shortened because of the pledge drive, and we are out of time with that. I want to thank you very much for being with us once again. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Joy.
John Peavyhouse is author of While Dangers Gather, Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers. He is an associate professor of political science at the University of Chicago, formerly with UW-Madison. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 12 minutes before 9 o'clock. Joining me for the next few minutes, Cheryl Gasser, who is Wisconsin Public Radio's Assistant Director of Talk Programming. Hello again, Cheryl.
Hello, Joy.
Just 11 minutes left in the program. This last part of the pledge drive for my program for this morning, working toward a very, very hefty $9,000 goal during the hour. And so far, doing well, $1,630 raised, but not nearly the $9,000 yet.
1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org. The way we reach that $9,000 goal or any goal that we have during our pledge drive is pledge by pledge. Any amount is welcome. Any amount makes you a member. The average pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, right around $10 a month, $120 per year. We also see many donations in the amount of a dollar a day, $365 for the year. What a value. You heard John Peavyhouse talk this hour about his new book, While Dangers Gather. You've heard him in the past talk with Joy about the political and military conditions in Iraq, about attempts at peace in the Middle East, the Geneva Convention. He is one of the regulars that we mm-hmm. rely on for analysis and expertise. We rely on you as well for your pledge this hour, 800-383-9772. Or WPR.org.
And certainly also talked some about President Bush's comments yesterday about avoiding World War III. Always want to talk with our guests about the current issues in the news to get their take, their expertise, and to allow you an opportunity to call in your own questions and let your own views be known. How important is that to you? Is it important enough to help pay for this service, to keep this forum of discussion going strong for you and all of the residents of the state of Wisconsin? 1-800-383-9772. 1-800-383-9772 to make your pledge of any amount. If your pledge is $150 a year or more, the thank you gift during this hour is not only the member benefit card that is always available, but John Peavyhouse's new book, While Dangers Gather, Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers. 1-800-383-9772.
And your pledge this hour takes 2 to 3 minutes, whether you're on the phone with a volunteer at 800-383-9772 or pledging online at WPR.org. We'll want to know who you are, how much you'd like to contribute, and how you would like to pay for it. Information, by the way, that we do not share with anyone. 1-800-383-9772. Let's hear from you this hour. If you're already a member, thank you for your support, but we want to hear from you now. 2 new members this hour. That's great, but we'd love to see that number grow.
And thanks to Patricia in Stevens Point, who has called in a pledge during the hour. who says, I have thoroughly enjoyed your programs while I'm driving to work. Well, thank you, Patricia. When I retire next year, I will be able to listen all day, and I'm looking forward to that. I find your radio station so much more than entertainment. It has become a tool, a conversation starter, and a companion. Well, isn't that nice? It's
wonderful.
It's good to be your companion, Patricia. And that's right. I find the radio to be a great companion when I'm driving to work. I mean, I drive to work, too. and also driving around the state of Wisconsin. And how many times have you said? I know I've done it when in conversation at the cocktail party or somewhere else. You know, hey, did you hear about such and such? I heard on Wisconsin Public Radio, or a guest that I heard on public radio said. How many times has that happened to you? Probably more than once. 1-800-383-9772. It is your contribution that keeps this service strong. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
And how well informed are you about the issues of the day because you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio? Think about all that you've learned on Joy's show alone. We like to think you learn something new every day here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and that's worth a pledge of support. 800-383-9772 or WPR.org. Wisconsin Public Radio's most important source of funding comes from listeners like you. 31% of our budget comes from listener support. We rely on you for contributions, and that's why we're asking you now to make a pledge of support.
You will find out in this book the ways Congress has put a check on or a hold on presidential war powers in the past, and there is certainly attention on the current situation in Iraq. And here's sort of a summary. It says here, since Democrats regained control of Congress, the Hill has been alive with the sound of hearings. Congress's earlier slumber and recent awakening should come as no surprise. For the last 6 decades, the partisan composition of Congress has defined the politics of war. Now facing a Democratic majority, President George W. Bush will find it far more difficult to stay in Iraq. From While Dangers Gather, Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers, your thank you gift for your pledge of $150 a year or more to Wisconsin Public Radio during this hour. But make the pledge not because you want the book or because you want the member card. Do it because you understand Wisconsin Public Radio counts on listener contributions to pay the bills. 1-800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
You listen to the program. You enjoy it. Listeners support this service. That's why we're here. That's why we come to you during these membership drives. It's the most effective way to raise money for Wisconsin Public Radio to keep us going strong. We're nearing the $1,800 mark this hour. We have $9,000 to raise. If we can't get there, we want to get as close as we can. Please keep those calls coming in at 1-800-383-9772. Thank you for that. Or pledge online at WPR.org.
Yeah, you really can pledge whatever you want. The average pledge is about $120 a year, which is $10 a month. And you can do it that way. You can pay for it monthly if you want to. That's the average pledge, but if you up that by just, what, 50 cents a month, it's $12.50 a month. If it's $12.50 a month instead of $10 a month, then you are entitled to the thank you gift this hour, While Dangers Gather, Congressional Checks on Presidential War Powers. So $12.50 a month, the book and the member benefit card. 1-800-383-9772. Pledge whatever Wisconsin Public Radio is worth to you, whatever fits into your budget. 1-800-383-9772.
And here's what some others are saying about John P.V. House's book. This is a state-of-the-art book on domestic and international politics, probably the best book yet on the domestic politics of American decisions to use military force, and an important book that should be taken seriously. While we take you seriously, we know that you want quality guests and important issues, and this book, While Dangers Gather, can be yours for a pledge of $150 a year or more to Wisconsin Public Radio. Won't you call now, 800-383-9772.
And we enjoy having you listening along, driving to work, like Patricia and Stevens Point. We love it when you call in and participate in the programs. It's great to hear your questions and viewpoints from all over the state. It's wonderful to have you suggest programs that you want to hear on this program when we have our monthly open lines, or maybe you send in requests via email or something else. This really is a partnership. You're a listener. You're a participant in the program. You suggest programs that you'd like us to do. And right now, we ask for your partnership in a different way, and that is in becoming a financial contributor to Wisconsin Public Radio. 31% of our budget comes from contributions from listeners like you. We wouldn't have this service the way it is if it weren't for listener input and listener financial contributions. 1-800-383-9772 is the number to call to make a pledge of any amount. Every pledge is vital and most appreciated. Again, the $150 level entitles you to the book While Dangers Gather and the member benefit card.
The member benefit card giving you 2-for-1 entrees at 250 restaurants around the state. You pay for one, you get the second one for free. 2-for-1 admission to cultural attractions like museums and symphonies. Two nights for the price of one new this fall. Two nights for the price of one at bed and breakfasts in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Minnesota. You could recoup the cost of your pledge by using the card, and it's good all year long. 800-383-9772 or WPR.org. And think that your pledge really is a vote of confidence for Joy and all she does for you 15 hours a week here in the mornings. Leo Duran, Karen Prager, Carmen Jackson, it's a great team, and you're part of that team with your pledge of financial support. 800-383-9772 or WPR.org.
Thanks very much, Cheryl, and thanks to Leo Duran and everybody else you just mentioned for putting together great programs every day, and including during this pledge drive. Tomorrow, we've got a really great lineup, too. We have George Meyer, former DNR secretary, will be with us in the 6 o'clock hour. Patricia McConnell, the co-host of Calling All Pets, will be with us in the 7 o'clock hour. And two great guests, Bill Leaders and Bill Krause, on our Friday Weekend Review. So I hope that you will be with us then, and I hope you will be with us now with your pledge of support to contribute to this kind of programming at 1-800-383-9772. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.